Maria.
Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. And I would like to, just as a reminder, marker here on tonight's archive, we are now at May the 9th on the West Coast and the early morning hours of May the 10th on the East Coast. You know how to figure out the time zones in between by now, I'm sure. What are we going to talk about tonight? Well, I have the sneaking suspicion that we're going to be all over the place because we're going to be talking about science and suppressed technologies and outer space and our galaxy. My regular Friday night guest and I have been going through a series of shows talking about photographs and our capacity to photograph other galaxies as well as gather information about our own galaxy. We seem to be able to find out more about what lies outside of our realm, called the Milky Way, than we know about what's in it. Or is it that they're not telling us the whole story? We're going to talk about that tonight, and as usual, we welcome your calls, those of you who are listening online and can see the BBSRadio.com webpage. You very well know the numbers by now. I will give them out in a few minutes just to remind those that might want to call in and join in on the conversation with tonight's guest. He is an author. He is a scientist, inventor, lecturer, and teacher, and my good friend, and our regular Friday evening guest on Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, good evening.
Don, how are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you.
Good. Always nice to hear that.
Well, you got to hear a little bit of what we're going to talk about, and we didn't put anything in concrete. Even when we do, we sort of turn it to powder. We have a way of going off on tangents occasionally, but there's nothing wrong with that because this is sort of an ongoing study of our science and our technology and our reality. And how we perceive things and how they really are. And you bring quite a bit of scientific expertise to the show, and we're grateful for that, your willingness to come on so frequently, and you're just an endless source of information. So I trust that whatever we talk about, it's going to be interesting, and we're all going to learn something from you. That's the... That's the feeling I get, and that's what I hear in the emails and phone calls that I get from listeners. So rest assured that they like the format of the show, especially if we share the truth. That's the main thing.
I agree. That's very important stuff.
Now, I'm sure you've been following all the things that are going on in the world in politics. We don't have to get into politics tonight. Some have scientific implications attached to them just because of the controlling mechanisms that are keeping us dumbed down and out of the loop as to what we know about higher realities or higher consciousness, and so we're going to do our best to dispel many myths and uncover what has been covered up. And a lot of that has to do with space travel and our perceptions of life. I thought I might kick off the topic by mentioning a series of videos that recently came out by my good friends Bill Ryan and Carrie Cassidy. They interviewed John Lear. Now, John Lear is known in several arenas. He's known for some research papers and some accounts of the extraterrestrial presence here on planet Earth, at least, we'll say, for about the past 20 years. He has been publishing and studying this. He's known also as a member of the Pilots for 9/11 Truth and has been on a number of talk shows discussing the impossibility of flying airplanes in the manner that these so-called terrorists did this. And we basically laid a case out that 9/11 has been totally debunked. The thing is that you have a corrupt government that won't do anything about it. They're not going to investigate themselves and incarcerate themselves for their murderous acts. And John Lear knows that and has moved away from that topic, but he has opened up some new avenues of information sharing in that, and I find some of his information quite heartening in the fact that he's agreeing with some things that I've been saying from a metaphysical perspective, and that's that there is life on all the planets in our solar system, and that we are not getting the whole scoop on the realities of these planets. Well, I'll give you an example. We're told that Venus is such a high temperature that it's totally inhabitable, and he has a totally different story to tell. And there's been literature out since the 1950s about Venus and the presence of an alien by the name of Val Thor, who was in Washington, D.C. We even have photographs of this individual. Life on Uranus, life on Mercury and Saturn and other planets in our solar system, and even Mars. He's alluding to the presence of building structures, infrastructure, crops, life forms on Mars, just like you and I have been talking about. So any thoughts on the fact that there's another researcher coming out, someone in the loop, in terms of what the black ops groups are doing as well?
Well, the only thing I can say off the top of my head, I would certainly love to know a lot more about it. Naturally, some of my perceptions are as shared as everybody else's when it comes to the environments of other planets, simply because of the fact that I don't have the instrumentality or the wherewithal to, you know, find out things for myself. Some of these things you accept as truth when they are given to you. For instance, you mentioned Mercury. Mercury is quite close to the sun, and I remember as a kid having been told that the surface temperature of Mercury was in excess of that of molten lead. And so, you know, it leaves you to ponder, well, if there is life up there, either the temperature is different or the life is certainly different. A very difficult thing to ponder without additional information. Regarding Venus, I'm like you. I've heard for years that there was life on Venus. As a matter of fact, I once related a story that occurred to me when I was in high school regarding an individual who claimed to have been from Venus. Of course, Mars, well, that's something that I've always had a special place in my heart for. Mars is quite a bit like Earth, even in terms of what our own scientists tell us. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if there was life on Mars. Some of the larger giant planets are a little bit difficult to conceive of if the theory of gravity is correct, because, for instance, Jupiter or Saturn, you could be crushed by your own weight if you set foot on those planets. But that, there again, that's depending on the accuracy of what we're taught. Their moons, however, like Europa and Io and some of the other celestial bodies that are orbiting these giant planets, may very well have life. Now, I don't know what kind of life. Did he go into any details as to how advanced this life is, or did he just say that each planet has some kind of life form on it?
When he talked about Venus, of course, he referred to Val Thor, who I mentioned in my introduction. Within the last 6 months, located several photos of Val Thor. And, if you saw him, you would say he was a movie star somewhere, a cross between, Robert Wagner and maybe Joe Campanella. He had sort of that clean cut look, dressed in a suit, hair slicked back. Just, he looked like a human. And he describes these people as being very evolved, very high in consciousness, very loving, non-warlike people, and just describing the planet as a paradise. One thing maybe I should backtrack for just a moment and reference his comments about the sun, and that what we've been told about the sun being this nuclear reactor is really not true. It's more of a, and I tend to agree with this from a metaphysical standpoint, that the sun is sort of a transducer of energies, higher vibrational energies that blanket the whole of our solar system, and that it's the atmosphere of each planet that produces the heat, depending on how it's comprised. And he used the example of Earth's atmosphere compared to the moon. Now, he also discussed the gravity. We're told, I remember this from school, they said, well, the gravity on the moon is approximately 1/6 that of Earth. According to him, and he gives the formula, it's 0.64 that of Earth. So it's 64 one-hundredths of Earth's gravitational field. He describes an anomaly based on some photos that he's gotten. And if the gravity is such, then it's capable of holding an atmosphere. And he was in communication with someone who had been to the moon and described the color. He basically, let's say, not just discerned, but calculated what the color of the atmosphere would be like. And he described how he chose a saffron color, which is a sort of a rich yellow. It's not a bright, if anyone has seen saffron or saffron incense, it's a golden kind of yellow. And he superimposed that color on the photo that he had of the moon, and the person said, yes, that's the color of the sky. It explains why when we see pictures of the moon, all the stars are missing, because they black out the sky. They would have to admit that there's an atmosphere on the moon. Very interesting information. So he's giving a conflicting bit of information on the actual gravity of the moon, as well as the fact that there is a breathable atmosphere. Now, he said that this individual was taken up with a group of scientists. They were taken up to the moon. And basically, the vehicle that they were in was opened up, and they were allowed to stick their head out the door, and the heat was so intense that they could only stand it for a few seconds. He said it was like being in a blast furnace, was the description that was given. Very different from what they tell us. very, very different. He even gave his account on the validity of the short little video, which you may have seen, and I'm sure many of our listeners may have seen this online. I think I even put it on my site, the crashing light bar when they're practicing the one small leap for man, one giant leap for mankind speech, and the light bar comes crashing down and ladders and everything. He talks about that specifically in terms of the ladder that they used to reproduce that, that in those days it would have been a wooden ladder, and here you have this aluminum ladder of a totally different scenario. So that even these films are created just to throw this disinformation out there. But he said that was definitely a production. It would have been so expensive, and that was my original comment, to do as a hoax, that only somebody who was actually doing that for covert purposes would have produced that. So there's some very insightful comments that he makes. But the interesting one, going back to the sun, was that the sun is not a nuclear reactor as such, but is a sort of a transducer, if you will, of these higher energies that are coming in. And the planets, each individual planet's atmosphere, it has the intelligence of transducing that into whatever heat the planet needs, or light. In fact, that phenomenon is basically caused by the atmosphere. It's not the brightness of the sun. To the contrary, he says, the sun is quite dark outside of our atmosphere. Interesting, interesting comments that he made. He showed...
Go ahead. I was going to say, these are in total agreement with things that I had advanced on earlier shows. As a matter of fact, what's really interesting is that Tesla's view of the sun was that it was a charged device, and he calculated the potential of it at one point, which was, I forget how many, you know, trillions or quadrillions of volts it was supposedly charged with, and that the energy that it was giving off was at least in part incredibly rapid particle fluxes that traversed the intervening space and arrived at Earth with enormous energies and produced the light in the atmosphere. Pardon me. In the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's very interesting to ponder on the fact that the vortex theory, which the ancients had, also supports this very idea that the vortex around each planet acts as a lens, and I'm not sure how it's supposed to work, but it involves the ether envelope of the atmosphere and takes this energy from the sun and, I'll use your word, transduces it into light and heat. As a matter of fact, the Egyptians supposedly had the knowledge of this phenomenon and used the mechanism in illuminating some of their tombs and stuff deep down underground,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the reasons why there have never been any torch marks or char marks found on these beautifully ornate ceilings, which were painted just as vividly as the walls. So all of this dovetails into information which, to me at least, is quite acceptable. It's just a shame that there isn't more detailed information available, because I know from my perspective, I would like to know in great detail, you know, how these things work. But it's interesting that he has this information. Did he ever disclose where he supposedly obtained it?
Well, he's getting a combination of, let's say, reports and bits and pieces from the various people who he's in contact with. He had quite a bit to disclose about the SR-71 And I've heard stories of the SR-71 having been modified that they can go up to the moon in roughly 45 minutes in an SR-71, and that it's done quite frequently. He shows images of, now he got that information from having been a pilot himself and knowing some details. He referred specifically to the October surprise. That was the orchestrated event that prevented Jimmy Carter from successfully liberating the political hostages that were being held in Tehran before Reagan became president. They got they paid some money to the Ayatollah Khomeini, and George Bush, according to him, flew on a probably a military jet of some sort to Paris and met with one of Khomeini's people, and he specifically referred to Bush returning to the United States on an SR-71 in 1 hour and 14 minutes. So you're talking about a blazing speed there, okay? You're roughly, if you round it off to 3,000 miles, they were going roughly 3,000 miles an hour. And that was in 1980. Now, I've heard several stories that they can travel to the moon in 45 minutes. So how much faster are they going that roughly 237,000 to 239,000 miles. Again, our measurements, and I base that statement on our measurements, and some of this is found in the Olaspe Bible or the Urantia book, that because of these etheric anomalies that you're describing, the lens factor, the measurements would be off because of the magnification that's occurring. You know, the illusion of the distance.
Well, that's a very well-known phenomenon, and to be honest with you, I don't know of anybody who's bothered to try and explain it. But for anybody who's listening and has an interest, you can look up a phenomenon called the Great Moon Illusion. And for anybody who's watched the moon rise, you know that it looks like a silver dollar, you might say, as it comes over the horizon, and by the time it gets up toward the zenith, it's the size of a dime. And so, you know, the real question is, what causes that phenomenon? So, and the only thing that ever made any sense to me was the Earth's vortex acts as a lens.
Yes, you and I have talked about that on a past show, and I'm in total agreement with you on that, on the vortex theory And they know this, too. They well know this. If they're doing the kind of interspace travel that we suspect they are doing, and more evidence is coming out, I'm not the only one that's talking about this, and I'm not talking about it from the position of the authoritative experience of an astronaut or a space traveler in the conventional sense. But just because I'm in a body on Earth doesn't mean that I don't have the vision of other realms. And you and I totally understand that. So I'm a bit of a freak in that way, I guess. But these are things that I have pondered for many years. And I see too many contradictions in mainstream science's explanation for things that I feel very differently about. And, again, this show is called Evident Footprints for a reason. That doesn't make it so because I call my show Evident Footprints. I'm just saying that we're constantly in search of truth and discerning the game that's being played upon us. And I'm sure you will agree. I'm singing to the choir or preaching to the choir.
Metaphorically. I do agree with you. I know for a fact that there's plenty of suppressed information and plenty of suppressed technology.
Yes.
The real thing that's difficult is gauging just how much has been suppressed.
Well, he's got a very large, detailed map of a base in Nevada called Sandia. And he gives the location of the base, and he describes a phenomenon where they bring an aircraft, an advanced aircraft, over this base. And if you were to see this, if you were to be able to see what this area looks like, let's say you're in an airplane and you fly over the area, and then you circle around and come back and watch a plane landing, you literally see the ground open from a hinge point. It opens up as if you were opening a compass to a wider angle. The ground opens up. The trees and the mountains and the terrain moves to the side. The vehicle goes into the opening, and it closes back up and takes on its original characteristic as you would see in your first flyover before that craft arrived. And he said it's just a matter of going down an elevator once the person gets out of the craft. Just goes down an elevator to another level, describing an enormous facility, a new secret base. He's very, very candid about the location and the purpose of this base.
And well, what is the purpose?
Well, it's another Dulce base, but it's ramped up. It's the most advanced technologically, the most advanced experimentation going on there. Probably quite a bit of manufacturing and testing and advancements that are going on. And he speaks very openly about the role of the Greys in all of this. And how much they're turning up. It's a very fascinating interview. I can't say that I agree with some of his spiritual conclusions. That's where I differ from the information that he's, or my opinions differ from his. But he's entitled to his opinions, and he may have more information to substantiate how he really feels about those things. I'm not saying that he has all the answers. He himself will say he doesn't. But he's got the pulse of what's going on pretty much at hand. And he's acknowledging it. And he counsels people to value your family and your friendships every day. Focus on those things, because the coming times and the things that they have planned are pretty sadistic. And, of course, we know that. We're aware of that. We're not operating out of fear. He discusses the whole thing about fear and the illusions that they're using and the brainwashing and the propaganda and all of that. He discussed all of that. Now, there's an interesting photograph that he received from an astronomer. Where does he get this information from, you ask? One piece he got from, I take it that it was somewhat an amateur astronomer, showing a nuclear fission reactor on within a crater on the moon. And it's the exact image of something that I found in a mountain range west of Colorado Springs. The difference is the photograph he's showing, unlike Google Earth, is black and white, and he said to Bill and Carrie, now you have to imagine this. This is a black and white photo. This has a blue hue to it. Parts of this reactor seen from space in real time show that it's blue, sort of a turquoise blue, which is exactly the same image that I found in this mountain range in Colorado. Very interesting. So there is a secret nuclear fission reactor in the mountains, the second mountain range to the west of Colorado Springs. The last time I went to Google Earth to look at that, they had it masked out, whited out, to make it look like cloud cover. but we know where it is. We know that that's there. I was shocked to see this because it's the same image, the same construction, appears to be the same size. Of course, I can't tell really. I don't know the altitude of his picture, but I could tell you the altitude of what I saw on Google Earth. And I find that fascinating that someone, an amateur astronomer, was able to pick that up. And he knew distinctly what it was. John did. Now, his fame, of course, for the listeners that aren't familiar with the name Lear, If you heard of the Lear Jet, his father, William Lear, was the developer of that. And he talked about some secret projects going on at the Skunk Works in Burbank, California, where they had one kind of plane being developed, what became known as the F-117. And he was talking about the I'm hoping I'm correct on this. It was either the F-19 or the F-119. For some reason, my mind blanked out on that. But it was a separate sealed project going on in the next section of the factory there. And it was discovered accidentally. One of the project managers insisted that they open up these doors and let him see what was in there. When he went in there, these military officers were there, and they were furious that someone had discovered this, the secret project. So he talks about the Lockheed involvement going back a ways, developing these planes, giving them special abilities. And he's got drawings or reproductions of these craft as well. Very, very interesting interview. Four parts in video. I recommend it highly. Not just to you, Jim, but to all the listeners. You can go to project-camelot.org and see it for yourself. It's very, very interesting. Now, he uses some foul language in a few places, but he's speaking out of emotion and just total disgust with the way these matters are handled. So, what's your take on a nuclear fission reactor on the moon?
Well, I mean, trying to look at it in a totally objective manner, my first thought on that was, how do we know we're looking at a reactor? Okay, so like you mentioned that you were comparing the design to what was visible in the mountains out in Colorado, and that's, I presume, the external part of the building, or the containment dome, as it
yes.
is often referred to.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, there could be a lot of reasons for a dome-shaped structure on the moon other than just a reactor, but let's assume for a moment that it is a reactor. Then, naturally, my immediate conclusion would be that somebody wants power, and a lot of it, for a long time, and they've gone ahead and built a structure like that on the moon. Now, if there's no other facilities visible in the immediate area, then my second conclusion would be that it's built outside for safety reasons, and perhaps the facilities that it's powering are beneath the surface of the moon, or perhaps there's a subterranean transmission line or some other means for conveying the power to a more distant location that we, you know, cannot see when you focus in on this dome.
Mm-hmm.
But the real question is, you know, whose technology is it? Between you and me, I mean, a source of fission reaction is somewhat antiquated in terms of some of the technologies that I know are available. And so I'm forced to conclude that if it is a reactor, then probably it's been put up there by people from this planet. And my second conclusion in that regard would be that it's been there for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a new structure.
Yes, it very much looks like a disc. I mean, if you first looked at this and didn't know what it was, you would say it looks like a flying saucer. But it's a dome shape, and then it has a rim around it, sort of like a round hat brim, if you want to call it that. And it has spokes coming from the outer edge of the dome to the edge of this rim that circulates around it. The dome itself is, in the photo that I got off of Google Earth, is a turquoise blue. And he what shocked me was he said, I've seen the color version of this, and it's blue. And I'm saying to myself, that's exactly, that looks just like what I saw in this photo that I captured on Google Earth. So whoever built the one in Colorado built the one on the moon, and vice versa. Do we have a caller?
Yeah.
Could you state your name and where you're calling from, please?
Daryl, I'm calling from Washington, Renton, Washington.
Okay. Do you have a question or a comment for our guest, Jim Murray?
I kind of came in halfway on in the show, and I was just kind of curious. You were talking about a person who had been giving you some information for some of the bases and that. I just wanted to get a name or some way I can go to a website and kind of check all that stuff out.
Well, his name is John Lear.
John
Lear. L-E-A-R.
And he's the one, the Learjet?
His father, William Lear, invented the Learjet.
He has his own website and all that?
I think he does. It may be, I don't know if it's johnlear.com or, you can find the interview that I'm referencing at projectcamelot.org.
Oh, okay. Is that David Wilcock?
No, David Wilcock is another interviewee on that site.
Oh, okay, because I just caught that site. But yeah, I just came across David Wilcock stuff, and I'll have to look at this stuff. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of that technology you're talking about, he has some videos on some really interesting stuff on magnetic drives that he used for generators, and he had created a craft. There was a guy in there who had created a craft that was in the 60s that was doing some of the stuff you're talking about, going to the moon and Mars and that.
Do you know the name of that individual?
No. And see, I just caught it. I just kind of glanced at it, and I was watching it. I didn't... It's on underneath the Project Camelot.
It's on
that website somewhere I caught. And it's the guy who actually... I don't know his name. He's a scientist who was later thrown in jail for what he... for a period of time, but he had created this generator using magnets and rollers, and it actually he was actually flying a disc, and it was going at this fast. They didn't even know how fast it would go, but they were, NASA was saying possibly it could go to the moon in 9 hours.
Hmm.
And you'd have to check that out on there.
Yeah.
He said that they are trying to build more of these right now, but they don't have the money to do it.
Well, I think all the money we have is being spent on those types of programs, personally. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe when he went to jail, that possibly maybe all this stuff that was taken was used to later on. This was in the 60s, so they probably took a lot of his information and were using stuff they built later.
Yeah, it's sound, the name that's coming, I don't know, Jim, do you have an idea who that might be? Is he talking about Otis Carr or Warren Getz?
Well, the craft he described sounds more like John Searle's,
Yeah, that's it,
device.
That's it.
Okay.
John Searle, yeah. He's out of Germany, right?
No, England.
England,
but
okay.
I don't know where he is nowadays, or he may have passed away, I'm not sure.
That's exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, that technology goes back to, I'd say, the post-war years, and seemed to have hit a peak of some sort in the 50s. But he was lingering on with research well into the 70s and 80s, and then all of a sudden, I haven't heard anything more about him, so I really think he may have passed away.
Yeah, probably. It's probably an old video that he had on there. I think because it was showing how these things could be built and how they could use to be power up cars and anything you wanted.
Yeah,
there was using magnets.
That sounds like Tesla technology there that may have been transferred from the Germans to John Searle.
Probably. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, there's so much fascinating technology floating around. If we really knew what it was capable of and understood its true history, I think we'd all be flabbergasted, Don.
Yeah. Well, I've been saying it, and I'm purely saying it from a metaphysical standpoint, but that does not make it real. In fact, I've even made the statement that there will come a time when traditional science will be learning from metaphysics. When they begin honoring the universal laws that govern everything. Right now, they're busy breaking universal laws. So when they stumble upon the truth accidentally, my gut feeling tells me that their inclination is to cover it up, because they lose power every time they empower us. And this is nothing but a power struggle. So do you have a question for Jim at all?
No, that was something I just wanted to get, like what you said about John Lear. So I could go back and look at some of that, because, you know, what you were talking, I just caught it halfway. I really, really am curious about going in there and getting more information. But it's really cool what you're talking about, and I'll have to go back on the archives and listen to the earlier part later on.
Well, we appreciate your call, and
I appreciate your show. This is the first time I've listened to it.
Come back.
Where did you say you were from?
Renton, Washington.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and there's some other interesting things. I'll have to look at more of your, because now I'm really curious about a lot of that stuff. So I'm going to go back and listen to that, and I'll probably listen to your show more often, because it's really, really what I'm into. I'm kind of just searching around the internet trying to find more stuff.
Okay, well, be sure to tell your friends about us and your enemies, because you can make them friends too.
That's true. Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
you have a good evening.
You too.
Okay. Bye. All right. See that, Jim? We do get calls here. Okay, we're on a good topic tonight.
Well, that's the second one that I've been involved with. I thought it was rather exciting.
And there's someone that's doing some research. You know, we tell people, you don't have to believe what we're saying. In fact, we're hypothesizing some things here, but, you're every bit as discerning as I am, and you have the scientific acumen to back up what you say. You know, I have my expertise in certain areas, and the reason you're on this show is you can answer those questions and deal with those topics intelligently. And you know, I'm coming from the dream world.
Well, I wouldn't put yourself down. After all, that's a fascinating capability that you have, and it's just as real as the real world, especially to you. The real thing that matters is that you get legitimate information through that channel.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's exciting to get it confirmed, and I thought that was at least worth pointing out. I can't say, 100% that I agree with everything that John Lear said. Another interesting point, you know about the so-called ghost of Bob Lazar, the former employee at Area 51 S4 in the late 80s, early 90s, who all of a sudden had all of his records expunged as if he didn't exist, and he was painted by the media as a fraud and a con man, and was actually brought up on pandering charges at one point because he was doing some computer work for someone that happened to be in the adult publications industry, and they were just using that as a ruse to silence him. John Lear divulges that since 2004, Bob Lazar, who doesn't exist according to the government, is now back at his old job, back engineering these power systems of captured craft.
Well, that's interesting. I spoke to Bob Lazar at one time many years ago, and if I'm not mistaken, I may actually have spoken to this fellow Lear. But if I did, it was a brief conversation. But it seems to me that I did contact him at one point.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of stuff is really fascinating, and I'm surprised, to be honest with you, that we don't have more than just two people coming out talking about this stuff. Because, as you know, the government, or whoever they are, makes use of an awful lot of workers. It isn't just a question of one or two. And, you know, there have been other stories. As a matter of fact, there was a story about a whole busload of people that used to get picked up at, I think it was, I'm almost positive it was Las Vegas.
Yes, yes.
And then they would take a special plane and go to work, and then at the end of the day they'd be brought back. And, you know, so, I mean, a busload, even if it's a small bus, I mean, you're talking 40, 50 people, certainly somebody would have something to say about where they're going and what they're doing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, he you remember this base, this new base I'm talking about? He's saying it. They're just going to call it Sandia. And that base is connected to some tunnels that go to two hotels. So they show up at the hotels, and they're given the route to go to get to a certain doorway that takes them to this underground tunnel system, and they're shuttled there underground in these high-speed, you know, Mach 2 to Mach 3 trains.
Yeah.
And no one suspects them. They look like the regular casino gamblers, the casino clientele, as they appear. And he even gave an account of Bob Lazar's experience of confronting a gray. He had at first witnessed a gray at S4, and John Lear goes into the description of what the room looked like and what the gray looked like. And then he describes now this new experience where they took him into sort of a waiting room type of area, and one by one they were led into this room, and there's a gray there who injects them. Well, it's not really an injection per se. He describes drawing a rectangular pattern on their arm, a long rectangle, on the forearm, on the outer part of the forearm. And he points to his right arm, and he draws this out for you visually with his fingertip. Then he said they made a series of abrasions in the skin, let's say at 90-degree angles to them, sort of like the way they lay chemtrails up in the sky, you know, almost like a checkerboard pattern. And they were dropping these minuscule drugs into their arm, and he said at that moment when it entered his bloodstream, he had the impression that he was at the top of a well with his hands on the outer edges of the well, hanging suspended from the outer edge with his hands, dropping hundreds and hundreds of feet into the well, as if his consciousness was just expanding or his body was expanding. And he said the only things he could remember were getting onto the airplane and getting off the airplane. He couldn't remember anything that went on. And he describes his comment to Bob, saying, well, you have a ring on your hand. Take the ring and put it on your other finger, and I'll know that they've drugged you if it's you're wearing it on the other finger. And he said it's too late. They've already done it. So they're using a very high potency type of forget drug that allows them to maintain some kind of intelligent consciousness that they're unaware of, if that makes sense. And then once they get back off the plane, they revert back to their normal self. But imagine wondering what you did all day and not having that. That would be like being in Congress. You know, that'd be like being paid by the federal government to be a politician. You'd have to wonder what you did at the end of the day.
Well, I can see how it would lead to a lot of matrimonial difficulties.
Oh yeah. Oh my goodness. But I found that very fascinating that he said, now since 2004, so you know, you're looking at somewhere around 4 years, Bob Lazar, who doesn't exist, is back engineering the power systems for these craft.
Well, you know, I have one comment to make about that forgetfulness thing. You know, we have long-term memory and short-term memory, as I'm sure you know.
Yes.
And if you're doing research and you're acquiring new data, in order for you to continue to expand the knowledge on a particular subject, you have to remember that data. And you have to remember what you found on a particular day so that you can add to it and expand your understanding and your consciousness of it. So I find it kind of difficult to believe that they would erase your memory at the end of the day, and you come home and don't know what the heck you did all day long, can't explain, you know, your job to your wife or anything like that, and then you're expected to go back and pick up where you left off the next day.
Well, couldn't that be accomplished through? Couldn't that be accomplished through downloading, you know, the information and then re-uploading it? We know they do this in the MK Ultra and the Monarch programs. That's exactly what they do. That's what Al Bielek has described, and Preston Nichols, and many other people who have been also part of the sex slave industry. They talk about the compartmentalization of the mental and emotional bodies. So we're just talking about another kind of technology that's got a sinister purpose.
Yeah, absolutely.
That he would have that remark, and that he would be so profoundly emotional about it. That to him it was a moral determination or conclusion because of that. That may very well be what it is. Maybe I'm just intuiting what they do. It's a technology that's been described in a lot of other areas too, in terms of cloning. That when they create a clone of a political figure, they download the memory just like they do in a computer memory bank, taking it off of one hard drive and putting it on another, and then re-uploading it.
Well, I'll tell you, quite honestly, if the technology that they have is that advanced, then not only is it pretty stunning, but it's pretty frightful. Because that means that they can get in and rearrange your mind and your memory to suit their purposes, and they don't necessarily have to let you go back to being yourself at the end of the day.
Well, that's what John Lear sort of hints to in his talk, in that that they're into monitoring the thoughts of everyone 24/7, everybody on the planet.
Well, good luck with that one, because you know the amount of data handling capability to do that would just be off the charts. I mean, even if you had the technology for someone or something to monitor all that mental jibber-jabber, you know, 24/7, so that would really be something.
It would be enough just to keep up with each episode of American Idol, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know about American Idol, but there's an awful lot of people that think about an awful lot of things during the course of the day, and it's not all work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have an enormous flow of stuff going on there. But, hey, you know, it doesn't surprise me. After all, I know for a fact that back in the 1960s already, the government had a huge computer system that was monitoring phone calls all over the country and checking conversations for certain keywords. And so this is just another hierarchy of the same concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it can be done, I'm sure they'll find a way to do it. so you won't have a private thought.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I always say, if we begin thinking or learn to think outside the box, then we entertain those possibilities. We're probably getting closer to the truth every time we do that. And coupling that with discernment, it becomes pretty compelling that there is something like that going on. Do you think Dolly the sheep was the first time they ever cloned anything? Of course
not. No.
Their own leaked information alludes to the fact that this has been going on for decades. And that's for public consumption, just to measure what the reaction would be. And everybody said, "Oh wow, that's cool." Well, you know, they're using gene modification to produce these Frankenfoods that Dr. Bill Deagle refers to so often in his monologues. They're so sadistic about what they're doing that they think that we don't see it. I mean, it only takes one of us to see it and get the message out to start waking people up. Now, I've resolved myself to the fact that there are some people that are just never going to wake up. And then there's some people who are awake who are going to believe. In other words, they're going to limit their knowledge to assumptions that, well, these things are not comfortable, so if they don't pay attention to them, they'll go away. You know, it's pretending they're not there. You're dealing with a variety, billions of different levels of consciousness, literally, on this planet. And the methods that they use are pretty fundamental. The methods they use for mind control and brainwashing are pretty fundamental, and they've been doing it for a long time, and they do it by keeping the public's mass consciousness within the parameters that through which they can operate their monitoring and their control. That's basically all that's going on here. There's the struggle that individuals or groups go through in perceiving this and comprehending it and then accepting it or denying it is where the problem is. It's why collectively we can't come up with a solution. And it was designed that way by them. But it doesn't mean that we all have to be stupid or ignorant.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a question just of stupid or ignorant. There's also the other element, and that is that when people experience some of this stuff, they begin to worry about their own sanity. And so even if they do remember certain things, I think that they make a decision to keep it to themselves for fear of how it'll be received and how they'll be perceived.
Mm-hmm. Well, think how boring this show would be if I approached it from that attitude.
Well, you know? I realize that.
Yeah, I'm not saying that like that's some revelation for you. I'm just saying, you know, consider the fact that if we all had that attitude, you know, there's no point in having this show. There's no point in you being a researcher or an inventor or a scientist if you're not going to progress, if you're not going to evolve, in not just in your experience, but in your knowledge and in your consciousness. I mean, those things are all separated for us against our will. And it's only those of us that can rise above that and devise methods to counteract that we prevent that from happening to us.
Well, I agree with you there.
So,
by the way, what was Lazar's comment? I'm sorry, not Lazar, Lear. What was Lear's comment about the nature of the grays? You have an advantage over me because I haven't seen this material.
Yeah. I'll try to give you the perspective he gave outside of what my perspective is. He said they're just bent on an agenda as if they have the right to do what they're doing. In other words, if they abduct cattle, if they mutilate 30 cattle, and he gives a description of going out to the Dulce base with Linda Moulton Howe, and they come upon 30 cattle that were just lying on the side of the road, no blood, missing certain organs. And he said they never did find the base, but they knew the location. There were people that could point them to the location of it, but it was hidden. It's hidden with this technology, like I'm describing at this Sandia complex. They have the roads, the entrances to these bases guarded and blocked off, and they have methods of getting the employees there and back, and people just sort of put up with the fact that they know it's there. They put up with the fact that they have one of the highest rates of missing abducted people in their population in Dulce per capita of anywhere in the United States. And it's like revisiting the time machine and the Morlocks, just taking these people underground and doing these sadistic experiments. He talked about the drawings. In fact, he shows Bill and Carrie the original drawings, which I saw, I think, first in 1989 of the Dulce base and the test tubes and the vats with human body parts and amber solutions and the connecting tubes. He references a video that was taken out of there, 27 photographs, Tom Castello setting up a code and giving the information to various people that he could trust. And he said if two periods of 6 months, it was either 4 or 6 months go by, think 4 months, and you don't hear from me two successive periods, it's time to release the information. And my research had shown me that he had gone to Costa Rica for a time, but he was in fear of his family in the United States. I think some of his relatives were living in Illinois. And they eventually got to him and killed him. But he was a guard there, and he had access to this information. And his information corroborated Charlene Tilton, who was abducted along with her son but escaped from the base. And they saw the same things. They described the same things. He talks about John Grace, who a.k.a. O.H. Krill, and that the government had an alien that they were dealing with at one time called Krill, spelled C-R-L-L-L, and that they used the same last name phonically and changed it to Krill, K-R-I-L-L, and gave it the initials O-H in front. So O.H. Krill was really John Grace bringing this information out, much like Branton did. And I can't remember Branton's full name. First name, I think, is David. I had it on the tip of my tongue a while ago, and it's slipped my memory. Maybe they're targeting me now. But it's interesting that they put this information out. It was a compendium of all the insider information that they had gleaned. And John Grace, if I'm not mistaken, worked at Area 51 and knew quite well what was going on. He also alludes, and I'm speaking about Lear, to the fact that Dr. Dan Burrish's testimony is very synchronistic with the things that he knows and the things that they've found out from other sources. There's a lot of information that's being cross-referenced and matching.
Well, that rings a bell with a guy whose name I don't recall, but he was a general or something and involved with the space program. And after he retired, he wrote a book. And in this book, he disclosed the fact that Roswell was a real incident, and that we had actually gotten technological information from the wreckage at Roswell, which eventually led to solid-state electronics, and that the aliens that were piloting that craft had in fact been harvested and examined. And he went on about a whole lot of things of that sort. And very shortly after the book was published, he died mysteriously, which I guess is not a complete surprise. But at any rate, I read that book myself and thought it was rather fascinating. Are you familiar with who I mean? I can't think of the guy's name.
Is it Corsi? C-O-R-S-I?
I really don't remember, but...
yeah, I
it was
think
a very
it was,
interesting book.
Yeah, I think it was Corsi. He was also part of the cover-up. They had him posing with the weather balloons, and it was, I don't know if he was involved in the crash dummies. That came out 8 years after the event. And I, you know, I've spoken about the Cape Girardeau case, which I discern happened in Jackson, Missouri, not in Cape Girardeau. And which was about 15 minutes away. It was within the time frame that Reverend William Huffington described going to give the last rites to these aliens. Now, you know, we could take those as just fictions, but they were referred to in the MJ-12 documents, and they were certain portions of the text were blacked out. They were redacted from the so-called public freedom of information documents that were released, but alluded to. And the anomalies that I noticed were the number of marriages that occurred between people at the Sykeston base in Missouri and Roswell. There were a huge number of marriages taking place between employees between those two cities. Those two bases. I found that very unusual.
Well, that's a little ways apart.
Well, but the connecting thread had to do with both places experienced some sort of a crash and retrieval.
Well, I realize that, but I'm just trying to figure out how these people met one another and became involved. You know, that's a good distance apart,
mm-hmm.
unless it had something to do with some of the so-called genetics programs that we keep hearing about, you know.
Yeah, very well could have been. Or it could have been that these people were just programmed to perform a function. And their experience made them viable candidates to participate in the fusion of the two groups. My understanding was that they all ended up at Roswell, from what I could tell. There were both men and women from the Sykeston area marrying those at Roswell. How did I come up with that? Research. Just genealogical research. I found this really, really interesting. And it was in the Sykeston newspaper. And I found that to be highly unusual that in one edition of a newspaper, I think there were 8 marriages that occurred on one weekend between people from Sykeston and Roswell. And was that just for public consumption that was printed? You know, it may not have even occurred. Is the point?
Well, what year or what time slot was this supposedly going on?
I discern that the crash was in mid-April 1941. So we're talking about 1941, which makes it even more highly unusual.
Well, yeah, because those are the war years.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then a year later, we had the Battle of Los Angeles, which was hushed for how many years? And, you know, Ralph Epperson came out with the December 6th edition of, and I'm speaking of Pearl Harbor. The day before Pearl Harbor, the, I can't remember the name of the newspaper, but there was a headline in this newspaper Kilauea something or other, I think, the Herald, I think it was the name of it, said the headline was, Japanese may attack Pearl Harbor, the day before Pearl Harbor. And Ralph Epperson has that posted on his website, RalphEpperson.com. Very interesting information is coming out now, yet people are just so dumbed down that they don't even react to it. We should be furious about these things, you see.
I know.
Yeah, it shows the complicity of a puppet government in all of these scripts. Now, you mentioned the solid-state circuitry. I noticed, first of all, solid-state circuitry is a byproduct of the petroleum industry, by and large. Would you agree? As far as the materials that they use.
Well, perhaps in some cases, but I think they originally sprang from the unusual semiconductor properties of germanium and is it silicon is the other one? But anyway, those two elements have the semiconducting properties that allow us to build transistors and IC chips and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I notice, and I can go back to 1963, 1964, with the introduction of the first Sony Trinitron television, which were 13-inch screens. And those were considered marvelous, but they had tremendous clarity of picture quality. They were not using the standard picture tube that other analog televisions had prior to those solid-state versions being made. Different capacitors, different power supplies, the whole, even the concept of the pixelation on the screen was different. And who was the manufacturer of those televisions? Sony. So that technology fell into the hands of the Rockefellers. And then we also had a mirrored version of that coming out of RCA, although they were always behind and the quality was always inferior to Sony. Even today, their tuning knobs and their volume potentiometers and their picture potentiometers were all in the back of the set, or they were in a location where they were subjected to degradation of atmospheric anomalies, dust, humidity, moisture, and those parts always went bad. Even their picture tubes were horrible. And that's just a fact. even today, the quality of the products suffers below some of these other manufacturers. And when you see the role that companies like Mitsubishi play in these covert projects, these black ops projects, and Sony, basically what they did is they just put together inventions that used hundreds and hundreds of these transistors. So they were marketing, instead of just selling one transistor, they were selling hundreds of them. Think of the amount of money that they were making from this, and it was a very cost-effective, cheaper way to build a better quality television set. So then you now could zero in or at least discern that maybe there was some covert technology being used subliminally in the picture or in the sound or both. And then we saw this move afterwards into the television cameras themselves. They became more sophisticated. And then the switching units and the sound equipment. But nothing like what they have on the high end. That's kept from us. I can tell you that we're getting the technology probably 40 to 50 years after the fact. And everything that we have today, and we marvel what we can do with computers and electronics and remote controls, but it's nothing like what they have.
Well, that doesn't surprise me too much, because that's been a general trend for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, they usually stick to their guns when it comes to that kind of stuff. When I worked with AT&T years ago in New York City, that would have been like 1966 or 67, somewhere around there. They had a policy at that time of developing stuff at Murray Hill Laboratories, which would be the Bell Labs over in New Jersey, and they were 20 to 30 years ahead of the technologies that they chose to use in their daily switching and transmitting equipment. And the reason for that was because, at least the story they gave us, was because they wanted to have a highly reliable products that had been time-tested online so that there'd be a minimum number of interruptions or problems with their technology. But when I was working there, they actually had the old electromagnetic switching devices like crossbar switches and stepping switches and electromechanical relays. And yet, at that same time, they were already making mock-ups of the present-day solid-state switching systems.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, right there is a perfect example. And that's not even considered, you know, high-tech military stuff. That's just relatively mundane technology.
Oh, yeah. I did my own experimentation and basically taught myself electronics, and I made oscillators, and I'd make a metronome and find out that it was because of the timer chip I was using in it or the operational amplifier, I could achieve frequencies that no metronome could achieve, and I could actually make the metronome vibrate at an incredible rate of speed, that it sang, it no longer pulsed. It in other words, the frequency was so high that it just became a pure tone. I got into operational amplifiers and NOR gates and OR gates this is approaching what they were doing with computers, but I was using them in audio circuits or sensing circuits, and I found it very interesting and quite fulfilling, and it gave me a lot of insight as to what some of the other technologies might be that are out there, that they're releasing these to the basic consumer at Radio Shack, if you know what I mean. You buy a breadboard and some 22 gauge wire and start wiring these things up, or print your own circuit boards and do the etching yourself and the soldering, and before you know it, you're inventing all kinds of really neat things. So I went that far with that. It's very time consuming, but I was able to actually make some things that I was able to eventually to use with my music production in one way or another. I made an optically powered metronome, or I should say optically sensed metronome, a metronome that would actually follow a drummer by how the drummer was moving his hands or his feet. It was so I could achieve real-time synchronization using an optical sensor, in other words, and converting it into a timing circuit. It's an interesting experiment that I did, but it caused me to reflect on these things that we're talking about, the release of these components, and look how rapidly IC chips and that whole technology, co-processors and computers and the microcircuitry that we have. It used to be that you needed a building the size of a city block to house all the analog components that you can put on the tip of your finger now. That's how advanced the technology's gotten. Where did that come from?
Well, that was one of the points that I made, that you know, the rumors that were circulating was that that these alien craft were already possessed of these technologies, and we basically back engineered them from some of these crashed vehicles. But also, you know, there's the other possibility, and that is I've heard many times that the military or the government has made arrangements with these extraterrestrials, and they've traded technology for human subjects,
mm-hmm.
so that they are allowed to harvest so many human beings per year for their purposes, in return for continuously supplying us with updated technology.
Yeah, and the story is that they exceeded their quota, and by the time we found out about it, it was too late. But I suspect that they knew about it all along and were privy to that information from the get-go. Just trying to sort of sweep it under the rug as much as they could.
Yeah, well, they're very good at that. But, I think the rug is getting rather lumpy after all these years, don't you?
Yeah. And it's getting worn, too.
Well, maybe that's the reason why so many things are leaking out now, you know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say they're actually oozing through the fabric of the rug. You can only hide so much stuff for so long.
Yes. Yes, and there's not a vacuum filter large enough to contain all of it either, is there? Well, Jim, we've extended our time, actually. This has been fascinating, very interesting. You see, we roll with this, don't we?
Well, I tell you very honestly, I would like you to send me the links on this latest stuff so that I could take some time to study it, because once I'm familiar with it, I'll have a lot more to say about it. But
okay.
You introduced a lot of interesting stuff tonight that I didn't know about, and so I'd like to keep up on it with your help.
Okay. I just got a note from Seth. He says... we can go a little bit longer if you're up to it. Or do you want to call it a night?
I don't have anything to do but sleep, and that's boring.
What's the matter? Did you forget how to dream, Jim?
Well, I do that while I'm awake, Don. You know that.
Okay. Well, if you want to roll on for a few more minutes, we'll take you up on that, Seth. I'll send him back an okay. I'm sure he's listening. Or he wouldn't have sent me that message. And we got a smiley face back. So he said, sure thing. So if you want to go, he must find this interesting himself. I think, you know, we have touched on a lot of subjects. And, you know, this history has not really been taught to anybody. You know, the stuff you're bringing out about transistors. I mean, we generally know that it must have... reached a certain amount of the scientific community and the industrial community and the military-industrial complex. I just make a simple Joe Sixpack type of observation is all I'm doing, and thinking these things through. Why is it that we can do these things and we only have transistors? We must have more than that. Because I see the limitations of the Sony Trinitron television. You know, they came out with, it seemed like every time there was a new innovation in the TV set, Sony was the first company to come out with it. And so there was the decision made that they were going to profit from the older technology now. In other words, they had used it and they had surpassed it in their covert purposes. Now they were going to make money off of the public by mass flooding the marketplace with these devices. they're doing it today with the iPods and cell phones. It's the same thing. If you want to figure out who's making the money, take a cell phone apart and look at the names there. You know, you see China and Korea and Japan on these things, or you see Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia. You see where these things are being made, presuming that they're putting the truth on those stamps. And all you have to do is figure out who owns the businesses that are manufacturing these parts. Generally, it's going to lead back to one of the central banks, isn't it?
Oh, I was just going to say, if you could ever follow the trail, that's probably where it's going to lead.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they have so many nested corporations and corporate fronts and dead ends and everything. I mean, I really wouldn't want the task of trying to track, you know, how they have things put together. It's not linear, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you know, my mentioning it isn't even about figuring out who's doing it, but just gaining a deeper understanding of what's going on is where I'm at there. It's obvious that there's a lot that's being withheld. And it raises the question, one word, why? Why is it being withheld? Don't we always come to the same conclusion? You know, it's about power and money. It's two words there.
I think you're correct in that, for sure, because, you know, Wilhelm Reich said that the lust for power and the ability to love were mutually exclusive. And if you are not a healthy human being from the standpoint of your biological energies, then you're going to be a very twisted neurotic, and it's eventually going to lead you further and further astray from what has been defined as normalcy. And it just seems to me that even if they don't have a particular agenda, just the idea of them knowing and us not knowing is enough to give them some jollies.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like having one up on us type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm sure they've got agendas besides. Don't get me wrong. I believe that they do. Because the trillions and trillions of dollars that are being milked off the efforts of the blue-collar workers on this planet are going somewhere, and they're certainly not improving infrastructure. They're certainly not improving, you know, the quality of life in general. So where is it going?
Well, yeah, I can guarantee you it's not going into the cold patching of roads. They even lost that art now. They can't even find the hole they're supposed to be filling. And that's not intended to be a pun. That's just came out that way. You're right about the infrastructure. There's an intentional neglect going on. There's a purpose that drives that. And the amount of disinformation that comes out in regard to that is proportionate to the propaganda on the TV, and it's proportionate to the level of ignorance and unconsciousness of the masses. They've not given up on trying to sell sex. And in fact, sex is the whole. I mean, they're literally selling sex as a commodity now, you know, with TV commercials and drugs and all the products that they create. Everything is based on just trying to hold us down as close to the ground as they can, or even put us in the ground in our level of consciousness. Everything is being directed toward that. That sort of tells you maybe we should be looking upward, right? That's where the action is going, because They're drawing your attention down. They're saying, look here, down on the ground. This is where your reality is. This is where your food is. This is where your libido is. This is where your ego is. This is where your reputation is. This is where everything is, down here. This is where we want you. So we can just raise the soles of our shoes a little bit and squash you. In essence, that's what's going on. And I don't mean to sound so philosophical about it or so coarse, but that's literally what they're doing.
Well, it's no surprise. I mean, they've used every trick in the book to keep the masses, if you want to use that term, under their thumb for a millennia. It's not just recently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's lots of people that I've talked to, Don, who really emphatically believe that the present world situation is nothing more than an extension of the Roman Empire. It's set up the same way. It's taxed the same way. It's governed the same way. And, you know, the methods that were put into play at that time could very easily have been transmitted down through the generations through these secret organizations until the time was right to bring it out all over again. You know, it's the old story of why ruin something that's working well. Don't fix it. It's not broken.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to go off on a tangent, but it's directly related. It give us maybe the opportunity to summarize everything. What would happen? I mean, where is the harm in us finding out that there are people in other realms? There are beings who are intelligent. There are loving, caring beings out there in space on other planets. There's life on other planets. Is it just the embarrassment of having the lie exposed? Is it that it's not about revealing that truth so much as revealing the illusion and their phoniness and their corruption? Is that, I mean, I that's where really I think what the answer is to that question. But what is your feeling on that?
Well, I think it's a multifaceted answer. You touched on most of the things in your comment. I believe that, first of all, there may even be some of these characters that want this information to come out legitimately at this time, simply because it's got to be an enormous burden to continuously keep it under wraps, and it's got to be expensive to keep it under wraps. But on the other hand, they have already... they've already presented themselves as our benevolent and honest governing body of representatives, and they can't now just turn around and say, well, we've been lying to you all along, but here's the truth, and from now on we'll be good. Because that doesn't work. They'll all get hanged. So,
yeah.
You know, so I think that's definitely part of it. But I also feel that there's a much more sinister and much more fundamental factor at work, and that is that they don't want mankind as a whole to enjoy the freedom and the liberation that would come from absolute knowledge of the fact that we're not only not alone, but you know, the universe being so enormous, if there's one other race of individuals out there, then there's tens of thousands of them. And that puts an enormous shift and a different spin entirely on the concepts of theology that we've been forced to swallow. You know, the organized church structure, with particular reference to the Catholic Church, has been very, very stringent about thoughts of that kind. And don't forget, it wasn't that long ago that you could be burned at the stake for even suggesting that that Earth was not the center of the universe, so to speak. So I think that there's a lot of reasons why the truth is being withheld, and they're all interlocking. You know, it isn't so easy to just put the truth out there, even if you wanted to at this point. But one good thing about it is I keep hearing noise to the effect that the factions involved in all of this are now at each other's throats for various reasons. Some of them are genuinely concerned about the plight of the world that they've partially caused, and others are just so nuts that they want to continue on with the game the way they've been playing it for the last few hundred years. And so, you know, this lack of unity in their fields of activity are bound to cast off fragments of the truth as the commotion escalates.
Go ahead.
I was almost done. I was just going to say, I think that's part of what's prompting a lot of these revelations that we've been getting lately. The problem, of course, is that now when people get these fragments, they conflict so violently with the programming that they've had earlier that they don't know what to do with it. They don't necessarily believe it.
Well, yeah. See, we're again, and I know how you use that word belief. It's the difference between belief and knowledge.
Right.
The things that you know with a certainty, Jim, you don't have to believe in.
Absolutely.
And that's the method that they use. I hear this from TV ministers or TV evangelists, and really, many people are waking up to the fallacies in the religious movements. These mega churches and these mega religions, manifestations, the new, almost changing daily manifestations of these religious philosophies and traditions and dogma. It's as though we don't remember what they said yesterday. Here, this is what we're going to say today, regardless. And that's being pushed. That agenda is being pushed from outside, obviously. These people are just puppets themselves, like so many of the other ones in the media. They're just media agents. They're propaganda agents is what they are, masquerading. And, I mean, you know, Jesus talked about that in the Bible as well, identifying who these people are and all the false prophets. You know, none of us, I say this often, none of us have all the answers, but if you apply a modicum of intelligence, and you have, on past shows, referred to, I think you quoted the statement that you can be one-eighth of a moron or something like that, and see...
A low-grade moron,
okay. Maybe that is 1/8. Maybe I perceived it as 1/8 of a moron. That you could figure out what's happening, but there's so many who are so deep into the programming, as you mentioned it, that they're hungry for any morsel of truth, and they just put out enough to keep the confusion, to stir the pot of confusion in the minds of those people that are paying any amount of attention and are searching for answers. They're always doing it in a way to belittle or to demean the value of spirituality and the reality of the spiritual in its entirety, for that matter. And they've got people so anchored in that the density of really two dimensions, because I think if one is really in a three-dimensional paradigm, they're going to see that there's something wrong. You know, I used an example on a past show, I think, of the two-dimensional drawing.
Oh, yeah, Flatland.
Yeah, Flatland. And I really see it at work here. So my point here is that this is a spiritual issue. Yes, it's a consciousness issue, and that is definitely a threat. If they're trying to stifle our consciousness, then our key is in our consciousness, right? Our key to extricating ourselves from this problem.
It's very obvious what they're doing from a certain perspective, because there is a natural hierarchy of the way consciousness unfolds. And you're not going to find some poor wretch who's out exposed to the elements, no food, no clothing, no money, ill health, no family, no nothing, writing beautiful poetry, making exceptionally lovely pictures, coming up with brand new scientific theories, or inventing incredible devices. He's not there. He can't be there. He's too busy trying to stay alive. And whether or not it's obvious to people, the tax structure, the way the money has been controlled, and all these other things essentially put the human race in that situation. If you don't have your lower strata of your natural hierarchy filled, your higher essence will not manifest. It can't come out. Even if there are inklings of it in an individual's mind, he's too busy struggling to pay his taxes, to pay his mortgage, to put food on the table, to do all the things that we have come to believe is normal living, to aspire to these higher pursuits.
Mm-hmm. You've heard me. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I really think that's a part of the mechanism that keeps man downtrodden. And we accept it as a way of life.
Yeah. I asked on past shows, and I'm sure you and I have discussed this, if you took the money out of the picture, if that aspect was removed from this whole matrix, you just said, no one has any money. What do we have left? What's the nature of the game at that point?
Well, you're kind of propelled backwards in time to a very different way of life. Because, first of all, your immediate focus would be on survival, or growing something, or otherwise obtaining food for yourself and your family. And as far as other things would be concerned, if you didn't possess something and you needed it, then without money, you're forced to rely on bartering. So you go see the guy down the street and you say, "Hey, look, if you build me a chair, I'll grind you some wheat." That type of thing. But in a way, it's a difficult way of living, but it's a more honest way of living. And of course, they wouldn't be able to pull all the shenanigans that they have pulled with fiat currencies, because it wouldn't be any money at all.
Well,
it's interesting that you bring that up too, Don. I'll tell you why. Because when the British overtook India and attempted to subjugate it the first time, and I don't remember when that was, but the people there were very highly spiritual at that time, and they were not easily seduced by the whole monetary / materialistic concepts that they were trying to push on them. So they didn't care. And so they couldn't really be subjugated, because they didn't fall into the trap. So, part of the idea of being liberated is, what is it that you really need, and what is it that you really want? As long as we lean into the trappings of a materialistic lifestyle, you automatically give them control, because that's where they come from. That's what they control. That's their way of doing things.
That's my whole point. If you take the money away, you remove the illusion.
Yeah.
At every level.
But of course, but the problem is, I don't think the human race has the moral and intestinal fiber to shake off that yoke, because they want to come home and kick off their shoes and watch TV. They want to have a nice car to drive. They want to have a house with a swimming pool and this and that. I mean, you know, as long as those wants are catered to and people are addicted to that materialistic way of life, they'll never be able to shake off the yoke, because actually they're putting it on by themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're acknowledging something that is not there as if it is. In other words, they're imagining it. And with that comes the fear and all the other emotions that they've been programmed to accept as their reality. You see, if you take the money away, these guys can't produce their TV shows. So you're not going to be able to watch TV. How long can you feed your family on American Idol and Paris Hilton images? Right?
Not long.
So TV is not going to be an issue at that point. And the newspapers are not going to be an issue. People are going to be, you said back in time, yeah, it's going to be starting from scratch. But we have an advantage. We have a certain modicum of discernment, of spiritual knowledge and intelligence, analytical ability to figure out these things for ourselves. And then collectively, maybe that is the sole solution to us coming out of this, you know, these problems, which is really one problem, and that's buying the illusion and allowing it to, an illusion to be our reality. Take the money out of the picture and the whole game board, the playing field changes instantly. They don't have the power anymore or the wherewithal to control things. You've taken away the very mechanism by which or through which they're achieving this.
Well, it's like the old idea that a guy with a six gun can hold off a crowd of 1,000 because nobody wants to take the first 6 bullets.
Yeah.
You know, but once you're out of bullets, be careful, because now you've got a bloodthirsty mob of 1,000 people and you're out of ammo.
Yeah.
Well, the psychological side of that is, you know, each individual says, "Oh my God, if I don't pay my taxes, they'll put me in jail. If I don't pay my mortgage, the bank will take the house. We'll be out in the street, and this and that and the other thing." And that's true, but it's only true from the perspective of one-on-one. If everybody in the United States said, "Guess what? We're not paying." That's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, or we just woke up and realized, hey, this is just a mirage. You know, this is an illusion, and they're creating this illusion out of thin air, anyway.
Yeah, I mean the money isn't even real. They, you know, if you read the manifest of the. The Federal Reserve System, they openly tell you that they essentially printed from nothing. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean,
well,
got a
Jim,
wallet full of nothing.
We're out of time now. we got to let Seth get home, but this was interesting. We talked about outer space and we came back to Earth, didn't we?
I don't know what happened to you there, but you cut out entirely on your last sentence.
Oh, I said we went to outer space and we came back to Earth.
Yes, and then we seem to end up at the vestibule of the spiritual realm, which is good.
Yeah. Well, I was saying we need to let Seth close up shop and get home to get his beauty sleep. We want to thank him for letting us extend this deep conversation we were in. Hopefully the listening audience enjoyed this as much as I did. I appreciate your discernment and your scientific analysis of what's going on today. And it gives us a new approach next week. And I'll let you decide what that topic will be next week.
Well, you forward me those links like I suggested, and I'll go through it, I promise you.
Okay. Yeah, you'll find it kind of interesting. You're going to hear, what I described on the show tonight repeated. I urge anyone, go to projectcamelot.org and listen to this message. Check out all the other really interesting interviews that Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy have posted on their website as well. They put this information out for a variety of purposes, but it's mostly to arrive at the truth about what's going on. And they do this at great risk to their personal safety. They're very courageous people, and they are sharing this with the whole of humanity. And we want to give hats off to them and John Lear for letting us talk about him. I didn't seek his permission, but he's a well-known dinner table topic amongst researchers and people who are interested in these topics. And Jim, you are becoming to be your own legend also with the wonderful interviews that you've been bringing to Evident Footprints. So I want to thank you personally.
Well, I'm glad to help, Don, and I enjoy doing it, and I think that people deserve to know what's out there.
Okay, and join with me in thanking Seth for the extra time we got tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Seth.
And you hear that, Seth. We're saying thanks. And we'd like to thank Don Newsom, and we're going to say goodnight to everybody. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. If it's not on mainstream, then it's on BBS Radio. And join me next week. I've got some great shows. Seth says you're welcome back on the chat message, Jim. Got some great shows lined up for you next week. We're going to get into some prophecies about changing times, as well as some more scientific discussion about what's going on. And we're going to come up with more solutions, folks. So you stay tuned. Tell your friends about us. Also visit my website, directlightproductions.com. I'm adding content every day. The site's really growing. A lot of people are showing up to say hello and check out the information. And we're going to keep it moving. In the meantime, I wish everyone a wonderful weekend and a night filled with peace, love, and light. And have a good night.
Details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.